It's an eventful 68th reel as Steven's on the road and Ray is out of power. Of course, Jeff is all comfy at home. Boring. Anyway, let's get to the real reason we're here. The boys head back in time to hang out with the super young and super cute Jake Gyllenhaal as he comes to terms with himself. No, not in that way. In Donnie Darko, they head to the theater to see the ever-fabulous Helen Mirren play a Nazi hunter in The Debt. Then check out the trailer for Martha Marcy May Marlene, an October release about a young woman escaping from a cult. It's a very thought-provoking week here at COO Movies, but even though, I doubt your commitment to Sparkle Motion.
The past.
You telling me you built a time machine?
The present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
The future.
Hi. Welcome to the future.
And I'm telling you, it's great here.
You're listening to COL Movies.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand spanking new reel of COL Movies. Reel number 68. My name is Jeff, and I would like to introduce my off-the-wire co-host, Ray and Steve. How are you guys doing?
I'm hanging
good,
in there.
Good adjectives.
Yeah, I know. I'm not plugged in for the first time. Completely on wireless at a Starbucks.
I'm the only one wired today.
I know. I'm at a wireless. I'm wireless at Starbucks in Chicago. Well, actually, Elmhurst.
Not only am I not wired, I am on a cellular connection.
Even cooler.
Yeah, and somehow it got better.
Yeah, so wonderful. Well, I'm like, I'm literally holding my iPad like up to the window in my house. So I'm sitting here in the dark, holding an iPad above my head, talking into headphones.
Well, at least we got going. So, because we have a time crunch, just because of power issues, we are going to go directly. We're going to skip the news and go directly into the past.
You built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
How apropos. In the past, we're talking about Donnie Darko from 2001, 85% fresh, 77% audience, directed by Richard Kelly, who did a commentary on the director's cut, which I watched, with Kevin Smith. Go figure.
Oh, really?
He has absolutely nothing to do with the movie. And starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Maggie Gyllenhaal, Gina Malone, Drew Barrymore, Patrick Swayze, and Noah Wiley. Wow, this is a freaky film.
It hurts my head.
It does. It would definitely hurt your head, especially when Fuzz just lost his signal. So, but in the meantime, We'll do a little bit talking about it while we're waiting for him to return.
Okie dokie.
When was the first time you saw this movie, Steve?
Oh gosh, I rented it from a Blockbuster because a bunch of people had told me I should see it, and that's why I saw it. It wasn't even because I was particularly interested in it. It was because some people said, you should really see this movie. And I'm like, okay, why not? I'll give it a shot. And I have to be honest with you that I turned it off. And it wasn't because I don't like it. Let's not go there. You know, that's completely not it. It is completely my inability to follow the movie. You know, I really had to, after I saw it that first time, I had to actually go back and kind of research it a little bit and better understand it. And then I was able to watch it again and go, oh, okay.
It is a bit of a movie which kind of gives you a weird, it is really weird with the mind because it's one of those things where you kind of have to watch it twice to really understand what the
heck. Yeah. Yeah, and I was definitely like, okay, is that what this meant? Or, you know, because, I mean, it's just one of those ones, if you just go in and somebody's like, hey, let's just pop this in and let's watch Donnie Darko. I mean, I don't know about you, but I think, as you know, partway through, I'd be like, could we please watch something else? You know what I mean? But if you were prepared for it and you understood that kind of the where it was going to go and kind of the crazy places it's going to go, and it's going to be a thought-provoking and kind of like conversational movie. Okay, I gotcha. You know, it's definitely a let's all go to dinner and discuss what the hell happened so we can all hopefully figure it out together kind of movie.
Mm-hmm. You were saying, Buzz?
Yeah, you'd have to be watching the movie.
Oh, and there he goes again.
There he goes again.
And the first time I saw this, it was actually one of my ex-boyfriends showed it to me, the regular cut, of course. And for some reason, it was okay to watch with someone. But mm-hmm. when you're watching it by yourself, which I did this time, I don't know if it was necessarily I got bored, but my mind just kept wandering off. And kept going. Maybe it was because maybe I was just not in the right mindset to watch the movie at the time.
Oh, okay. Could be. I could appreciate that.
So I tried watching it by just like having it playing next to me while I did something else.
I have to say, you know, having Wikipedia around this time around watching it helped me out a lot.
Oh, and then I watched the director's commentary, which was fun. Especially with Kevin Smith in there, you know, he's basically a viewer trying to get giving his take on the movie, and he asked questions. I think he got some questions from some people, like he posted somewhere that he was going to do this commentary, and I don't think it was on Twitter; it was something else because it was longer ago, I'm sure. But he posted somewhere that, hey, do you guys got any questions about Donnie Darko so that he can bring it up during the commentary? And he did. You know, he did it, like, at the right time. And it's like they have these moments where they've been talking. They're talking about the movie, and they just do their talking thing. And then there was a point where it was like nothing.
Yeah.
They just weren't saying anything. So then he pulls out the questions. Which, you know, just kind of helps be like, okay, so this isn't working.
So I could see this totally being, but you know what the funny part is? I can almost see this being kind of a Kevin Smith movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, like, he would totally either, it's going to be on his, like, top 10 movies of best movies, or he could even be someone who, I don't think he would have directed it. It would have come out a lot different, but I think it's a kind of a story that he would.
I don't think he would have directed or wrote this.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
I mean, this is like a Kevin Smith-ish movie.
Yeah.
Like you can connect where you know, you could see how Kevin Smith probably really likes this movie.
Especially if he's with what we hear about Red State. I could see this kind of being in that genre.
Yeah,
you can
really appreciate the movie for what it is. And, you know, they do go into, because he is a writer-director, because Kelly's a writer-director as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wrote the movie and he directed the movie. So with the, with that, he was able to go and be asking about, like, how you did this and that sort of thing. You try to get everything connected.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to spark the conversation as a commentary would be, that a commentary should be, and it really felt very natural of a commentary. I know I'm talking a lot about the commentary of this movie, but it, mainly because that was the last thing I was doing right before we started. But I think that's something that's very important. I think people should really, maybe understand it maybe a little bit better if they listen to the commentary as well, because it's one of those things, as I said, you have to watch it probably twice at least to really start sinking your head into everything. It's not one of those movies that where it's like, watch once and then let it sink in. It's one of those is like, huh? What?
Okay. Yeah.
Basics of this?
Agreed.
Hey, guys. I'm back. Can you hear the generator running in the background?
I cannot.
No.
Okay, good. Good, good, good.
Yay.
I'm outside in an attempt to get a better signal, and my neighbor has his generator running. So
You're good.
It's all good. We were just talking about pretty much how we reacted the first time we saw this movie. And I was just saying in summary quickly that first time I saw it, I really had to stop watching it, and I don't think I went back to it. But then I watched it later on after reading up on it, and kind of because I just kind of pulled it off the shelves because someone had said, "Hey, you should see this movie." And I was like, "Oh, why did I watch this?"
I watched it for the same, like, somebody is like, "Oh, you should see this movie. It's really cool." And then I watched it and I was like, "What the heck, man? This movie is bizarre." And then I remember sort of looking it up on the internet after I was done watching it and just sort of like finding all this stuff, like the webpage for the movie had all this really weird sort of stuff that you could find on it. And
oh yeah, I went to that too. I remember going to that too.
And it was like one of those first movies or first products that I can remember having sort of like that viral sort of marketing going on behind the scenes. Like, it was attracting a following of people that, you know, through the internet, based on all these bizarre things on the internet that they had put out there.
Yeah, the director's cut actually has more of that book, which I think they published on the website, The Philosophy of Time Travel. That book, they actually put snippets of it into the director's cut.
Yeah, I've never seen the director's cut. I don't own that one.
That's the one I got. It was cheaper than a regular cut on Amazon, so I got it.
Yeah.
Still need to explore more of the features. But apparently that these were on the regular cuts DVD as well, so on the DVD of the summer.
Yeah. There's a ton of all the behind the scenes or cut scenes in it, like 20, I think, altogether.
Sure, I have that. This one too.
Ah. Interesting.
Oh, there's even a director's cut theatrical trailer.
What? Really?
He made his own trailer.
Yeah, he had a really hard time marketing this movie, I guess, when, you know, he was making it, because a lot of studio execs just weren't, like, they weren't sold on it completely, you know, and it didn't really do that hot in the box office.
It's at Sundance, and not many people were wanting to pick it up because they just didn't know how to market this movie.
Right.
You know, it's one of those. It really is one of those movies which is the only reason why it's direct to DVD is not because it wouldn't be a great movie to watch in the theater, but because there's no way to really market it very well so that no one would see it in the theater anyways. So it's almost direct to DVD, and, you know, people hear about it, maybe putting out on.
Right, it's definitely a word of mouth kind of movie, and studios these days don't have the patience to wait for a movie to build up a word of mouth sort of, you know, interest. It's got to make or break. It's like that first weekend, it's got to, you know, pull in enough people, which totally depends on how you market it.
True.
Now, did anybody sort of get the feeling like, all right, like there's people that are on, there's two camps. There's the people that are like, the time travel thing is real and all that stuff is real. And then there's the camp that's like, he's nuts and everything that you're seeing is basically him hallucinating and dealing with his sort of stumble into psychosis.
I could go with that. I could go with the psychosis thing.
Yeah.
And that's mainly just because it just seems so bizarre. And I think it kind of tells you all of that from the beginning, you know, like when he and his sister are having the fight at the very beginning of the movie and she's like, "Well, I'll just tell mom you're off your meds."
Right.
you know, and that kind of sets the tone for the whole thing. And then you see how he has his interaction with this, you know, mom, and then you realize that he's kind of blacking out and all that kind of stuff. So it kind of sets the tone for, I think, you know, the majority of everything that's going on is inside of his head.
Right. So then the huge revelation at the end then is the fact that they cut it. I think it's one of the deleted scenes that he wasn't really ever on meds, that his psychiatrist or whatever was giving him a placebo.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So his brain was just freaking out.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well,
so
one thing is right at the beginning, of course, the plane engine crashes
right
to his room.
Of all places.
Where did the plane engine come from?
Yeah, well,
here's where some things come in, and maybe because I was listening to the director's commentary, this kind of made sense or was explained to me. But think about this. The plane crashes, but Donnie had walked out of the house.
Right.
Right.
So he survived. Then later on, he's starting to go essentially what seems to be generally more insane. And then after his girlfriend gets run over, he kind of cracks. He goes out into the hills, looks up into the sky, sees his mother's airplane flying overhead, and all of a sudden the airplane engine gets yanked off of it and goes back through a wormhole and ends up in his room, where he ends up being, and he actually dies.
Right. It's one of those weird sort of temporal mechanics. Like,
no, here's the thing is, though, after that happens, he's not there to pull the airplane engine out of the sky in order to kill himself in the past.
So in the commentary, that they were saying that he was responsible for the plane crashing?
He was responsible for the plane crashing. But the thing is, the plane doesn't crash.
Well, what I'm saying is that to me it never was apparent that he was the one that made the plane crash. That the plane crashed regardless of his involvement. It was just whether or not he was in his room or not in his room. And we were seeing an alternate timeline of him being out of his room at the time that the engine fell.
I could see that. But see, that's where my brain starts hurting. Because I just want to see the movie and kind of get it all. It's very Tarantino-esque, where you're just like, okay, is this the present, the past, the future, the current, a wormhole? You know, it's like, is this an alternate reality?
This is the direct opposite of the turn your brain off and watch a movie type of movie.
Yeah.
You can't really do that.
Yeah, you have to keep up with every last second of this movie.
Basically, in order to have the engine drop to kill Donnie had to telekinetically drop the plane into a wormhole to go back in time to kill himself, essentially. But yes, by doing so, he saved his girlfriend from ever dying.
Right. I get it. I've watched enough Star Trek episodes to kind of get that. Like, that doesn't bother me. I'm well versed in the Office of Temporal Affairs.
Anyways. Well, I thought it was smart, I guess.
Temporal prepare. Temporal affairs. Silly. Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's the Trekkie in me.
You know, I totally forgot that Patrick Swayze was in this movie. I think I remember Drew Barrymore was. I just did not realize that Patrick Swayze was in the movie.
I always remember Patrick Swayze just because it's like Patrick Swayze playing this kind of creepy pedophile.
Although I didn't feel like like, he didn't seem like a pedophile until we found out he was a pedophile. Maybe it's just me.
Yeah.
Point.
And then Drew Barrymore, I know she's in the movie, but I always forget that she's playing like an adult in this. Well, it's really weird. I have this really weird thing with Drew Barrymore because me and Drew Barrymore are the same age. So like now that she's like, whenever I see her playing a role that's like, ooh, she's playing a grown up, like, that's weird. Like, does that mean I'm a grown up too? But the one that I always forget about in this is Noah Wiley, that he's in this. You know, he's not in it a lot, but I always forget that he's in it.
It's weird because I never really, like, it's like people say that Noah Wiley's in there, and I'm like, oh wait, he was? Oh, yeah, he was. But after I see it, and even when I see it, as long until somebody reminds me that it's Noah Wiley, I don't even realize it's him.
Mm.
Okay. I don't know why. That's just weird to me. But I love Drew Barrymore's character and was annoyed by what was happening to her.
The emo entire... English teacher?
Well, she wasn't emo English teacher. I didn't feel that way. But just like all these stuck up bastards, and they fire her and prevent her from teaching basic books, and it's just weird, and I just want to punch the principal and the stupid gym teacher. Did she actually teach gym? I mean,
really? I don't know, she was more of a health teacher. But she didn't really teach health. She just made their kids watch those goddamn Patrick Swayze infomercial things,
pedophile movies.
Yeah.
The fear and love. Well, everybody knows that fear and love aren't the opposites ends of the spectrum. It's anger and love. Come on.
Yeah. It's sort of that sort of introduction to this quasi-religious sort of thing going on in the background. And it's kind of like a really interesting subtext, I guess. Sometimes I don't understand, like, why he brought certain things into the movie. Like the whole Drew Barrymore struggle, that's not something to me that's weird. I mean, that's like a classic page out of the new, like, teacher students read book that all the parents think are controversial. And, you know, that's not totally uncommon. I just don't exactly know what the point of her role in the movie was. Like, what did she serve? What was her purpose in the movie?
To say cellar door is the most beautiful phrase in all the world.
I guess.
Well, and it really is, because there's that one point, that one phrase, which gives Donnie later on the idea to open the cellar door at Lady Death's house.
Grandma Death.
If it wasn't for her being fired and her writing cellar door on the blackboard, he never would have done that.
Right.
Yep. True.
So basically, the whole movie is an observation how one point in time can affect, you know, a million other things.
Nope. As I said, in order for the timeline to go the way that it was going, the airplane engine needs to drop at Donnie's house. Donnie's room would kill him.
Quit focusing on the one thing, dude. You're focusing on one thing in the whole movie.
That makes
no sense.
There's
so much more to that.
Yeah. There is no... I mean, you got to remember, there's no real timeline on this movie. It's all fake.
I don't know about that. I think there's one timeline, but in order for an event to happen, there had to be this other timeline that kind of grew off the first one. Just meant to end at a certain point, but had to then go back because of time travel.
Right.
Then the regular timeline continues. And the people who died in the alternate timeline did not die.
Right. Well, the alternate timeline was basically there to prepare him to die.
So do you think it really was more like an immediate dream?
I don't know. It can come off as a dream. It can come off as the moment everything happened between the time he, like, was in his bed and the time that the engine actually crashed into him and he died. You know, the whole movie could have taken place as sort of like your whole life flashes before you, you know. So you went on. He already knew, you know, it's like he was already dead. That's another thing. Like, another theory is he was already dead. When the movie starts, when that engine crashes, he's already dead. And everything that you're seeing is sort of like not so much an afterlife, but everything that's going through his brain to sort of prepare him to realize that he's going to die.
That's an interesting theory. I like that one.
Yeah, well, there's tons of theories on this movie, man. It's crazy. So much so that they actually made a, I guess you would call it a sequel to this film.
I saw that. That was, yeah.
About his sister. But it was just, like, completely terrible. It got such bad reviews, I didn't even attempt to watch it. I was just like, really? They're making another one of these movies?
And it wasn't by the same guy, was it?
No. He wanted nothing to do with it. He's like, this was my film, and I made my mark, and I'm done with this.
Oh, and Darko.
Yeah. Yes, a Donnie Darko film.
A Donnie Darko tale. The story picks up 7 years after the first film, when little sister Samantha Darko and her best friend Corey are now 18 and on a road trip to Los Angeles, where they are plagued by bizarre visions.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
Fail. All right. And I'd love to keep talking about this, but my battery is ticking towards empty.
All right. So moving on. Well, we've learned when you're famous, you got to have a cigarette. Destruction is a form of creation. Soap is apparently the greatest invention of mankind. Smurfs are asexual. Cellar door is the most beautiful phrase in the English language. And some people are just born with tragedy in their blood. Crazy bizarre movie, which is worth seeing at least once, probably twice. Maybe seeing the regular one and the director's cut and trying to see the differences would be kind of interesting.
Yeah, and It's a bizarre film. I've watched it a bunch of times. I always sort of pick up on something every time I watch it. It's going to be one of those things that you're going to kind of love it, hate it, or just don't get it. But I can't not recommend, unless I know that the person's not going to like this kind of movie. I know the person well enough. It's not a movie I can't recommend. Like, so.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on that one. It just, I mean, basically, I'm one of the ones that just hurts my brain and hurts my head. But I think it's worth seeing with people who like the kind of movie. And I find it to be a very let's discuss it rather than just a pop it in at the party. And only other thing I wanted to say was I enjoyed the casting of Jake and... Oh, my gosh. Sorry about that, everybody. Woo. Glad you're not here right now. Yeah. But also that I like the casting of Jake and Maggie because I thought that they were good foils for each other, especially at the beginning. You know, real brother and sister tension, you know.
Perfect. Yes.
All right. So moving on.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
This week I went to a brand spanking new place that I hadn't heard of until I was looking for where to watch this movie. Went to Flick's Brew House and saw The Debt. 76% fresh, 70% audience, starring John Madden, Helen Mirren, Jessica Chastain, Tom Wilkerson, Martin Kazakas, and some more people.
Come on! I wanted you to try to pronounce it.
Syrian Hines.
Yeah, there you go.
Syrian Hines, yes.
Syrian. In any case. So, The Debt. So there's the surgeon of Birkenau. Israel wants to put him on trial for war crimes. They send a team in to get him out. And here is the story. The rest of the story.
Right. It's sort of a another movie that's jumping. I inadvertently sort of strung three movies together that have these weird sort of displacements in time, whether intentional or unintentional. So you've got this movie that is jumping between, was it 1997 and 1965?
Mm-hmm. I like to think of it as just past and present.
Yeah. But I mean, based on the subject matter, the people would be really old if it was in 2011. Mm-hmm. So I think that particularly why they did that. But I guess it's based off, or this is a remake of a foreign film.
Mm-hmm.
I found it, I was going in sort of expecting a much slower paced sort of political, I don't know if I would use the word thriller, but I was rather surprised by the pacing. There wasn't a time when I was particularly bored watching this movie. I was always engaged. You know, starting off from the very beginning when the dude literally throws himself under a truck, that was sort of like the first shocks. Like, whoa, what the heck just happened?
It's like, welcome to the movie, everybody.
Yeah. It really, really, it literally throws the audience under that truck with him, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're just kind of like, okay, why did he do that? You know, that was really my biggest question in the movie, really, was why would he do that? And then, you know, they sort of reveal that later on, but they just sort of hint at it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, was this movie what you expected it to be?
Not it
wasn't,
really.
Yeah, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be initially either.
Yeah. What were you guys expecting?
I don't know. I was expecting that she was like, I mean, from everything on it, I kind of expected that Helen Mirren was like a CIA agent kind of person. Mm-hmm. Who had been hunting Nazis her whole life or something like that, and this was going to be her last job. Or, I mean, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, there was some kind of, I don't know. That's kind of what I got from watching the commercials and stuff. But now, did I think that this was bad? No. I just think that it was just one of those things where it's like at the time when it was kind of happening, when the original situation was happening, is like the country, you know, Israel needed positivity.
Right.
You know, and they needed some kind of positivity. So I see why it happened, and I see why she and the others still had to clean it up, you know, right. And could never get over it, you know, but that they had so much tension with each other was just such a bad, you know, over this situation, just it sucked for them, you know, like the one guy ended up killing himself over it, and the other guy is like kind of living off of it, and then she's been making kind of a living off of being the war hero, you know, to the point where everybody else hates her in that group.
Right. So. Well, I think it's like the debt is sort of multifaceted because you have the debt that they basically paid to their country. Initially just going over there to do that job, you know, putting their lives on the line to do that. And then, the debt sort of again to their country and sort of themselves to hold that secret, you know, knowing that if it got out that they failed, you know, that it would have been so kind of like a blow to the country. You know, they were to bear that burden was sort of a debt, you know. So it just sort of on all sort of, and then there were debts to each other as far as, you know, you had sort of an unrequited love, you know, between two of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
It had this really weird dynamic between those three, and the weird thing was to me was. I never really got the whole, I think they could have played on the whole love triangle a little more. Not so much like, I don't know, it's hard to explain. Like, I got that, you know, the Sam Worthington and I can't remember the name of the actress who played the younger version of Helen Mirren.
Chastain?
Yeah. You know, their whole sort of, I really kind of wish they would have focused more on those two and their sort of, because once they've kind of went their separate ways as far as not interacting with each other, I sort of like just cut that off, and it didn't help build the sort of like, I don't know, the tension between those two to me wasn't built up enough.
Mm. Okay, I could see that.
You know, you really didn't get any of that until they showed him coming to talk to her the day before he killed himself. You know,
and
he's just basically, then you kind of get the whole like how much he really regretted not pursuing what he did, and it's just sort of, that was just sort of a weird, you know, a weird thing for me. But I mean, like I said, I was always engaged in the movie. I thought the pacing was good. I really didn't expect the whole jaunt to the Ukraine towards the end of the movie. You know, I thought that was rather interesting, because then you go from, you know, when you're back in the past, you get wrapped up in that situation and the tension that's building for their mission and whether or not they're going to get caught and what they're going to do and what's going to happen. And then that's sort of relieved because you find out what happens. And then you think, oh, well, you know, the tension's over. We're going to be on the downhill now for the rest of the movie. And then it switches to the present. And then it's like, oh, well, here's what happened in the beginning of the movie that we didn't show you. And we're gonna ramp the tension back up, because now she's going to have to go face this dude, you know, that she let get away. So in that sense, it was sort of a roller coaster ride, I think. And not an unentertaining one. It, you know, I guess my only real beef with this movie was that it didn't really do a whole lot that I wasn't able to figure out. You know, as soon as they sort of showed the what would conceivably be the end of the movie and the very beginning of the film, it was kind of like, okay, I sort of know where this is going. I think I know where it's going.
Yeah, I think when you watch it from the very beginning, I think, fortunately, this is one of those movies where Fuzz and I were actually able to see it together.
Yay. Oh, nice.
Yep. Yep. We actually went to see it together last night while I was up here. And one of the things I kind of turned to him and said, I was like, from the very beginning when they came out of the carrier, I was like, there's a secret. You know what I mean, from the very beginning. And then, you know, and this from Colin was all like, "Ah, this was such a boring movie. I figured it out for the first moment." You know, kind of. Sorry, Colin. That was not my impression of you. I was just using a different voice. Although it could be.
I don't know if he thought it was boring. You know.
Yeah, I know, but it was predictable from the moment the movie started. You just wondered where it was going to go. You just wonder where it was going to go from there, and if it was going to break away from that predictability or not.
Like, this was more of one of those. It's about the journey, not about
the end. The result. Yeah, the result. Agreed.
Because the idea is more of. Here's the situation. Here's something that happened. Here's what happened because of it. Is really what it is because right when they're coming off, you get the idea, okay, something's not right here. They have a secret. We find out that they see this. We see in a flashback when Rachel's reading from the book saying that she killed him, knowing that this is the beginning of the movie and that can't be the end of the story. She didn't kill him. Oh, but what really happened?
Right.
And it's about finding out what really happened and what they did about it afterwards. And it's about that story, not the secret. It's not about the secret. It's not trying to hide the secret from the audience until the very end when we find it out and everybody goes, it's about, this is the secret. Here's what happened, why they had the secret, and what they did about it afterwards.
Right. It's more about literally the cost of the secret,
being the war hero. And well, I mean, it's about how propaganda is, you know,
Yeah.
It's helpful at a time when a country is in need of a hero. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it also, I think it was just interesting to see it from, I guess, see it from the Israeli perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I thought that that was intriguing because I think we always think about how propaganda was used in Germany or how it was used in, how it's used in the U.S. and conspiracy theories and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's kind of like, I know what you did last summer for grown-ups.
Right.
You know what I mean? And if that secret really got out, it wouldn't be that you wouldn't get into college. It would be that, you know, your entire government is a sham. You know, and that's kind of a that would be a huge difficult thing for anybody to believe when you want to have a you know, when a lot of this was not just about your people, but it was also about your faith and getting back at, you know, these atrocities. Right.
Well, you had
6 million people.
You had these people that were taking credit for something, right. You know, that were holding the secret. But so many other people, like her daughter, had built basically a career off of this lie. Mm-hmm. So if it were to come out, it not only would it shame the people who were involved directly for lying, but I mean, it would shatter her daughter's life basically because everything that she wrote about was, you know, fake, you know, fictitious.
You lied to me, mother.
Actually,
which is sort of interesting because they sort of hinted at that when she said that, you know, my mother wouldn't answer any of my questions. Mm-hmm. You know, but my father, who was more involved with the government, you know, after he had his little accident and he became, you know, involved in the Israeli government, he was the one who basically furnished all the details of their mission.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
which I'm surprised he gave her the credit.
Right.
Based off of, I mean, I guess he knew that if it eventually all came out in the wash, that he didn't want to be the one that got pushed, you know, pushed for all the truth and the to be the hero, because he knew he wasn't, you know, he wouldn't be able to do it, or he would have to take the blame.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
If it wasn't the truth.
Right. Well, I think for the way things panned out, unless you did a whole heck of a lot of modifications to the story, at the point at which, you know, they decided to tell the lie, which is, you know, she got into a fight with him, and, you know, instead of him getting away, they said, oh, well, she managed to, you know, pull herself up, and, you know, she's like, oh, I just thought about all the bad things he did, and that's what motivated me to get up and pull the trigger. You know, that was the defining moment at which, you know, the lie was created, which is a very simple moment. I think that's why it became hers. You know, she was, it was easiest to basically pin that lie on her and say, you know, the most plausible story is, you know, she got up. She was the one that was the marksman.
That's true. You know, that's true, too.
Mentioned. So.
She's been in a marksman the last two movies we've seen Helen Mirren in.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I don't know if she was as that much of a marksman as she was just blue, like could blow shit up. You know, she just she knew how to just shoot it all.
Yeah. But.
Yeah. But no, well, what did you guys think about the, I think one of the debates that Fuzz and I had, though, actually standing outside of the theater, was talking about Sam Worthington. And yes. Do you think that he was, we both thought that he was good in this movie, but we were both thinking, is it just because this character had no emotion and was completely like, you know, a big wall? Or was right. it because Sam knew how to act? And so we were kind of trying to,
the character is very emotionally vapid, which is kind of funny because if you think of the roles that he's taken. Now, I didn't really watch Clash of the Titans, so I can't really say. But like the Terminator, you know, I don't know. He wasn't very emotional in that either up until he was, like, yelling that he wasn't a Terminator. But, yeah, is it the fact that he was actually doing a good job of fleshing this rather emotionless character out, or he was just being himself?
Yeah.
I think it was probably more being himself.
Yeah.
I think more than acting, but he also really didn't have much to do.
Mm, that's true.
I didn't really feel like he really did much, like the character didn't do much the entire movie.
Well, I mean, honestly, there were a lot of scenes in this movie that involved just people staring at each other sternly.
Yes, we were talking about that. There was a lot of good eye contact.
Yes, it's like
and
communicating. Switch to this guy who's staring at this guy, and then switch back to him who's looking at him, and
a lot of nonverbal communication going on. A lot of things being said with the eyes.
Yes, yeah. I think the eyebrows.
There's something like that in Rocky Horror too, where they just went back and forth between
Rocky. Well, yeah, that whole situation.
Oh no, I remember that, but that's kind of like what I was thinking. But I was thinking of something else. It's like there was one where there was this long dramatic pause and something, and people were looking, just constantly looking at each other. Again, it was in a comedy or something. Clue? No.
Noises off.
Maybe. Anyways, that's beside the point. But in any case, I don't think Sam Worthington did that much. He had his points where, you know, the whole breaking of the plate.
Yeah, that was. He. I thought that was a good scene. That was
the emotional release.
Yeah. But that was more like acting out, and then he stops and becomes the same character he was before.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Well, because I mean, everybody expected that if anybody was going to break, it was going to be her.
Right.
You know, nobody was expecting it was going to be either one of those guys.
She was the one who was talking to him through most of the movie, and you know, she was the one that could get him to eat without, you know, fighting. And so, yeah, everybody, you know, and they spent so much time with the commander and her, you know, him schooling her, basically saying, you know, you don't look at him, you don't talk to him, don't listen to him. You know, he is not a person, he is not a human being. You know. And Sam Worthington's character was much more about like, you know, we can't do this because we can't stoop to their level. We can't, you know, we can't become the animals that they were.
Being a holistic one.
And, right, and then he's the one who loses it at the end. And basically, you know, the guy who said his only goal was to capture this guy, he's basically the reason they got away, you know, when you get to the root cause of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Nope, absolutely.
Let's see. Casting matches.
I thought Jessica and Helen Mirren were really done well as far as a match for older, younger. Mm-hmm. Especially there was a transition scene where they went from 1965 to 1997 where she had the exact sort of body posture and it just sort of faded into Helen Mirren and it was like, whoa, like that actually kind of looks like her. But I wasn't buying Sam Worthington's character and his older self.
No, I wasn't either.
Yeah.
You know,
I'd agree with you 100%.
That was an unfortunate bit of casting, I think. So,
I mean, if they were trying to make him look like he had lived in the Amazon for, you know, 30 years and been running all over the world, sure. I mean, but I didn't even get the facial matches at all.
Right.
Any kind of, you know what I mean? But they made him look old and haggard and like he'd been, you know, for sure been stressed his entire life.
He knew it. Knew how to act.
Yeah.
But and the other thing is, too, that he really didn't get a lot of screen time as his older self. So, you know.
True. True.
He only got a couple scenes, and one of them involved him connecting his face with a bus.
Mm.
I've changed my mind. I've got you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ouch.
You know, yeah. It felt like a scene from Final Destination.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that was a scene in Final Destination.
Well, you know, I got one question I had for you guys when it came to that whole, I guess, that whole situation. Do you think that Rachel was really I mean, whose baby was she, do you think? That's the question I'm trying to ask.
I think it was Stetson's, because I don't think Rachel and what's his name ever actually did it. I don't think they ever
When did she and Stefan do it?
Oh, come on. It was right there in the
Yeah, it was right after. When she went to the gyno and he's like, you had intercourse last night.
Forgot.
It was right before that. You know, Stefan's lying there in the bed smoking a cigarette.
Right. Okay. No, you're right. You're right.
And that's the scene where you sort of see Sam Worthington's character just like sort of regretting, like he knows that they're, you know, totally doing it in the other room, and he's just like, damn, why did I walk away?
Why am I such a nice guy?
Good point.
I'm approaching 25%, so.
All right. So what have we learned? Well, we've learned.
Wait. Two more things real quick. Sorry.
Quick. Come on.
Okay. The sound of this movie was amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Seeing it in surround sound or some kind of theater setting is necessary, because even like the sound of rain and things like that, like I was kept looking at Fuzz like, is it raining outside? You know, because it was like, it sounded so real in the backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And then I just wanted to say to anybody that wants to go see this movie, just word of warning, it is about, you know, the kind of like Hitler atrocities and stuff like that. Be prepared to see images, be kind of challenged mentally to think about those kinds of things, you know, because it's not just, you know, a movie. It's definitely about, it's about the people, you know, that issue ultimately. Mm-hmm. So just kind of get a mindset, you know, it's not Schindler's List, but it's got some images and some conversation.
I didn't think it was that bad, honestly. No, but I really, you know, it was barely there from what I saw. There were pictures, but that's about it. I don't think it was that bad. I mean, it was there, sure. I'm not going to deny that. But
it's what the movie is about.
It was like all in just that one little section, then, what is actually seen.
Okay. Well, I mean, but it's right. Talked about.
He did these things, but we only see anything about him in that one thing where Rachel is looking at the pictures. That's it. That's the only time.
Right, but I think Steve's more talking about the conversation between Rachel and him when he talks about their weakness.
Oh, okay. And, I gotcha.
You know, this is why we were able to do this to you. Right. You all just march to your deaths. You know, nobody's fighting. You just think about yourselves, you know, nobody stood up, nobody was willing to risk their life for their fellow person, you know, and that's why we were just able to kill you all. That whole scene is pretty intense. So much so that it got a verbal exclamation from part of my viewing party.
Really? I didn't have many people in there, so.
Yes.
In any case, we're working on. Ah, there he is.
Sorry, I dropped my internet dropped.
That's all right. Happens. Anyways, what have we learned? We've learned never to argue with an armed woman. We are supposed to pursue your goals in your 20s. Always, always have your papers ready. God doesn't plant car bombs, and that is what we've learned from The Debt. I was expecting more action in this movie, but got something different. The balance of going from the past and to the present was a little bit weird, but worked well. Recommend it.
Yeah, like I was saying before, you know, the movie is somewhat predictable, but the pacing I feel is strong. It keeps you entertained. It keeps things moving forward. When you have such a spy espionage sort of thing, you know, it's not going to be a James Bond film, so don't expect that. It takes things a little more realistically, I think. Like I said, it's an entertaining film. If you're intrigued at all by the sort of World War II-esque stories and espionage and hunting Nazis, then definitely check it out.
Helen Mirren is rocks. She's the reason to go see this movie. I enjoyed it, even though it was predictable, and the acting was really good.
Excellent. So, let's go into the future.
Hi. Welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
Martha, Marcy May, Marlene, directed by Sean Durkin, starring Elizabeth Olsen, Sarah Paulson, and John Hawkes. This film focuses on Martha, plays by Elizabeth Wilson, a young woman who flees from an abusive cult in the Catskill Mountains and is led by a MAC leader, Patrick. Lucy, Martha's older sister, receives a call from a payphone one day from Martha asking her to come out and get her. Martha, who has been missing for months, slowly begins to assimilate into her sister's family, but her increasing paranoia leads her to believe that Patrick and his cult may still be watching her every move. So Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene. Actually, I think it's Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
Yes.
If I got it right from the trailer.
So basically, I picked another movie that you have a character that is kind of fading in and out of what is perceived reality and what is reality. So I don't know how I managed to do this. It wasn't intentional. I dug this trailer up because I was desperately searching for something to talk about that just looked interesting. Being towards the end of the summer movie season, the pickings were rather slim. I had never seen this trailer at the theater. I think I stumbled upon it just on Apple's QuickTime trailer site. And I just thought it looked really interesting. The whole sort of cult dynamic, psychological manipulation, that whole sort of thing kind of intrigues me, because I've always been fascinated by the fact that people can allow themselves to get sort of taken over by these sorts of people and organizations. So anything that may help me sort of understand how that can happen, I've always found fascinating.
I think I saw this trailer for the first time in Film State. Great place to find trailers, by the way. Once a week, they talk about trailers. Nice. Anyways. Well, 2 weeks. Two times a week, but one of the days they talk about trailers. They do new on DVD, new in theaters, and news.
Anyways. Gotcha.
Film State. Recommended. In any case. I've got mixed feelings on this, because I really want, based off of the name and what my first impression of this, I really felt like this would be like some sort of psychological thriller, which ends up having be more about a story about Martha having multiple personalities. Where this was one person who's Martha, Marcy, May, and Marlene. You know, so she has these different personalities. Maybe some of them come out differently, or, you know, like in cult, she's Marcy May, or she's just Marcy, and she has this one personality. Then she breaks off from that, doesn't remember what the previous one was, and she's Martha again, or something like that. I'm getting a little bit of that, because there's this seems to be this time shift that's mentioned during it. Like, she doesn't remember a portion of the day when she was maybe one of the other personalities. But I'm not getting that. That's making any sense. Like, it has all these hints, but I'm not feeling like what I'm believing is true.
Right. Well, I'm pretty sure the title is... Go ahead.
I was going to say, the synopsis lends a lot of credence and information about this. You know, I don't know. When I first saw the trailer, I was like, I don't know what the heck I just watched. I'm trying to figure out what it was. You know, I mean, I was just trying to watch it cold. But once I get into watching the, once I got into reading kind of the synopsis and stuff, even though there's not a whole lot out there about it, it made a little more sense.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I get the impression to me, the whole Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene thing. Like, you know, Marcy May is sort of this characterization that the cult has given her. You know, like the cult leader says, you look like a Marcy May to me. Like, that's his first step into breaking her down, is to take her name away from her.
Right.
You know? Your name is Martha, but I'm going to, you know, I don't think you're not Martha here. You're this person. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start there. And if I can get you to accept that you're not Martha on a very simple level, here's my way in to right, sort of breaking right. you down.
Maybe, you know, maybe, yeah, that's a kind of way of getting into maybe a multiple personality type thing. She breaks away from the cult. She becomes Martha again. But she gets back into the cult somehow. She becomes Marcy May again. But then right. there comes what's the question, where's Marlene?
Yeah, I don't know if that's supposed to be her last name or if that's another
incarnation.
Person. I haven't quite figured that one out yet. But if you guys watch, there's another trailer that was released recently, an international trailer, which plays much more on the whole, like, her having delusions and not really knowing if what she's seeing is real or not real. You know, she's seeing the cult leader and stuff in places, and you know, she's getting very paranoid that they're coming to get her, to come take her back. You know, so it very much plays up that aspect of it. It's more apparent, which I'm hoping that maybe as we get closer to release, maybe they will do this a similar thing with a second trailer released here. But
I was going to tell you that. Speaking of what you're talking about, that I've been playing with the poster. Like, if you go on certain sites, they've got a poster, and it looks like one of those QR codes.
If you
looked at it. And I've got to try to figure it out. I couldn't, before we got here, I couldn't do it, but I was trying to see. It wouldn't scan because it's, like, color in there. So I was trying to see if I could make it black and white and try to scan it and see if it gives you any information. Because it looks like a scannable QR code. If you look at the poster trailer, the poster. So if anybody has a second, there's ones that I've seen, like, that's on Wikipedia and stuff. Look at it and see what you think. I couldn't scan it because I was trying to see if maybe it would give you any info, you know, like.
Right.
Well, no, it's kind of viral.
Yeah. No telling, though. Guess we'll have to play with it and see.
Oh, now that's definitely a QR code.
Mm-hmm. Let's see.
Right.
Dang, you just need black and...
Yeah, it wouldn't let me scan it in color, so I have to figure out how to make it black and white. Now I didn't have time to do it before we got here tonight.
Interesting.
.net, anyways. Sure. Yeah, so that's Martha, Marcy, May, and Marlene. Try saying that 5 minutes fast. So all I got to say about this is it's another psychological thriller. Just another psychological thriller.
Boo.
Well, I hope it's a good psychological thriller. I'm all for movies that mess with your brain. You know?
So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it looks like just another psychological thriller.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. Anyways, you were saying.
Right. Well, basically what you're saying is it looks like one of those movies that if you weren't part of this podcast, you might not see.
Yeah, probably.
All right. Well,
sorry.
You just might see it.
What do you know? It's a limited release. And I don't see it anywhere on our list. And in case.
Oh, it'll show up on DVD eventually.
That's true. I was just going to say, I just didn't get it from the trailer, but reading the synopsis and then going back and seeing the trailer makes it sound interesting, like it'd be something I'd want to watch at home. I don't know so much about going to the movies for it, but it sounds like something I'd pop it in a DVD, you know, and check it out.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, coming up, coming attractions next week, we're going to be taking a look at 1999's Drop Dead Gorgeous, Apollo 18, and Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. So, yet another four-word, almost, alliteration.
Alliteration?
Yeah, this is a double alliteration because there's two different alliterations used to still in four words, so it's two words with two... Anyways, I'm going to shut up now and say any final thoughts.
I hope my power comes back on soon.
I hope so too.
Yeah, we're sorry about how crazy this show has been, but I'm on the road. Fuzz is powerless. You know, Jeff is the only one in control. Right, exactly. So sorry, everybody. But I did have a blast hanging out with Fuzz last night, getting a chance to see the movie.
Hopefully we get to do it again tomorrow. Yay!
Yay! We're trying. And and also that, you know, my team is doing all right. We're not doing as great as we want to, but we're doing well. We've lost our first game today, but we're not out of it. 17-16.
Right. So close.
So close. Y'all have no idea how heartbreaking it was. But anywho, we're still getting there. But but did have a great time. We went to AMC Lowe's, took a couple pictures. I think Lowe's should sponsor us. We'll sell Stubbs cards for them. I don't care. But I have $10 in Stubbs card for money now. Yay.
Sweet. Stubbs is a barbecue place down here, I think.
Well, it's a good deal for people like us who go to movies regularly.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's a good deal.
Super.
Yeah. Oh, Flicks Brewhouse. Seriously, it's like the Alamo Draft House, yet cleaner. It's like you take a like an AMC and you smash that into the Alamo Draft House. It's pretty much you get a ton of draft beers.
Okay, I was gonna say there would be some people that would say it'd be like the Alamo Draft House with less character.
Mm. And you know what? You're correct. But it's got a lot of beer, and experience wise, one, the chairs just weren't as comfortable as the Alamo Draft House. Two, my feet didn't stick to the floor like the Alamo Draft House.
Oh wow!
Everything was shiny. The counter which they had the where they put the food, one is bigger. Mm-hmm. And it actually can slide, so you can bring it as close to you as you want. So you're not like reaching up across the table. And they've got a call button for your waitress.
Awesome.
You press a button.
Well, you know what they say. You know, anyway. Sometimes a lot of beer can compensate for lack of character.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
So, but they do have like a ton of beers. It's a microbrewery. So, but this is like brand new. So the guy who was working there, the brewmaster, he's still working on the recipes for the beers that they're coming up with. They're going to start releasing them soon here. It's from Galaxy Theaters, and this is the only one of its kind. It's in Round Rock. Right. Texas here.
Wow.
Right off of 35. It's a nice place. I really still kind of like the Malamo Draft House better. just because of the character. You're right. You're absolutely right. Just because of character on that. I still think that I'm probably going to be a flip back and forth between the Alamo Draft House and Flicks Brewhouse. If I can't see it at an Alamo, I'll probably use Flicks as my second, and then the Regal Cinemas that I go to. My third for where I'm seeing movies. But if you're ever in Austin, check them out. Again, my main attraction to it is the beers. It's kind of nice. I've only tried their hummus and the popcorn. Popcorn, they bring in a bag versus the bowl that they get to you at the Alamo. I prefer the bowl myself. So I haven't tried much more of that, so I still need to kind of sample their more of their food, but that's it. In any case, if you want to tell us what you think about any of these, got any news that you want to talk about, sorry we didn't have any this time, please go to our website, COLmovies.com, leave a comment. Also, email us at COLmovies@gmail.com, leave a voicemail at 361-265-8255. That's 361-COL-TALK. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/COLmovies, which is essentially pulling from Facebook. At facebook.com/COLmovies. Go to our website to find out all the ways to subscribe, but please pop into iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. With that, for me, for Fuzz, for Steven, Aaron.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, kid.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. I just stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.